Welcome to this episode of Midlife Mend with me, Philip Briscoe. Today, my guest is James Davis. James is one half of the Midlife Mentors, which is another podcast looking at all things to do with midlife. So thank you, James. Welcome.
Thank you for having me here, Philip. Pleasure to be here.
Today, James, we're going to be talking about some of the midlife challenges that many of us face, and you're going to be telling your story, including things like living overseas, going through divorce in midlife, and then talking about the andropause, which I will let you explain. So perhaps, James, over to you. Do you want to just start where your story begins?
Yeah, so I guess probably a good place to start is the Midlife Mentors and why we created that, essentially. And I guess my background was I trained in psychology at university because I didn't really know what else to do, and it seemed interesting. I went on and did a master's in psychology and actually worked as a psychologist for a short space of time before leaving that to follow my passion, which was magazine journalism. And that led to a career in media, where I moved more into the kind of corporate side, business development strategy. But I had this hankering still to do it. I loved what I did, but it wasn't really that fulfilling. And I kept thinking there must be a better option out there for me. So in 2011, I actually, with my wife at the time, moved to Ibiza to take over a health center there with the idea of running retreats, but kind of a whole new format. So at that time, retreats are very much that kind of a boot camp. We'll take you away. We'll feed you rice and beast you. And we were like, no, let's partner with 5-star hotels. Let's give people great food. Let's actually talk to them about what's going on from a mindset perspective and beliefs and how that influences behavior, as well as all the nutrition and the rest of it. So we're running that for many years. And then, I think our client base just started to become more and more late 30s, 40s, 50s, midlife self. So the Midlife Mentors brand was really seeing people reach this phase of life and be like, oh, yeah, this is it. It's the beginning of the end. It's the inevitable decline from here. And we're like, well, aging is a process, but there's so much we can be doing from a lifestyle perspective to make these changes positive and embrace life. And I had my own personal experience, like you mentioned there. So I moved to Ibiza with my wife, and then we separated in 2014, very suddenly. So I was suddenly left looking after a business in a foreign country on my own that I'd previously been running with her. And my confidence and my self-esteem was just on the floor. Like, I was in my mid-40s. I was like, how do I pick myself up from here? Who even wants me? Like, I'm washed up on this island running retreats. I don't even know if I want to do that at the moment, because it messes with your head. So it faced kind of a long, dark night of the soul, really, a lot of introspection. And it took me a long time to come through that.
Were there any kind of trigger points or a point where you thought, do you know what? I need to do something now. I might not know what it is, but I need to take action of some sort or get help rather.
I think I just reached that kind of, I allowed myself to kind of, I think the first reaction you have is kind of like, this isn't happening. If it is happening, I'll be fine. And then I allowed myself to kind of sit in the despair of it for a while. But I got to a point where it's like, I can't carry on like this. I can't. I basically coped by taking back control of anything I had, which was my body. So that's punishing myself with really grueling hard workouts. But then, at the end of the day, I'd work my full day, manage a happy face on people. And I'd go home and like drink a bottle of wine to myself and then collapse in bed and then get up and rinse and repeat. And I was just like, I know from the work I do that this is not healthy. It's not actually helping me. So it's kind of like, okay, I know I've got the toolkit. How do I start clawing my way out of this? And looking around, who can I reach out to for help and support on it as well? And I think for men listening, from my own personal experience and working with men, we tend to be very poor at asking for help when we need it. I think, men tend to be very solution focused. I'm sure most men are there, if they've thought about self-development, probably had a ton of books that they've read, because like, if I read the book, then I can apply it myself without actually having to be vulnerable to anyone else. Actually, we all need support. We all need help. And I encourage men just to get out there and talk to friends or, approach professionals, seek help when you think you need it. Because it was a big changing point for me, going out there and doing different therapies and opening my mind to different ways of coping helped me move forward.
Do you think there's, this concept of a stigma, especially for men who are a bit older, they can't talk about their feelings. They see it as a sign of, admission of weakness somehow. I mean, how do men change their mindset around that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's true. boys don't cry, you know, all that, you know, and I think for our generation, we're taught certainly to like keep our emotions in check. People don't like to see emotional men. Remember Gazza crying at the World Cup was like a massive, massive thing. I'm like, there's actually a man crying. But I think here's the thing, like to open up and be vulnerable, to actually show your feelings, express your feelings, is actually a form of courage. So it's actually a very brave thing to do. If you're not used to it, it can certainly feel very overwhelming and frightening. But the more you do it, the easier it becomes, like anything. And when you do share and when you are open, it gives the other person the permission to as well. So classic one is, you know, you might have a friend that you've avoided talking to about certain things. When you do talk about it, then they'll open up and go, well, you know what? You know, this is happening for me. And then you can start to have that honest conversation. I think even we know just sometimes talking about it and getting an outside perspective on an issue can really help you move forward with it.
So a lot of us are just suffering in silence and there's no need to really.
I think men are terrible at suffering in silence and all the research supports that. Men are, compared to women, they're less likely to maintain social networks. They have much smaller social networks. They won't open up to their social networks. They won't seek professional help for issues. They're much later to go to the doctor for medical, you know, and it's this whole like strong man handles it himself, looks after it himself. But yes, that's a great trait to have, but we need to recognize when we do need help, when we do need our social network around us, when we want to reach out, when we want support, you know, likewise, also being there to support others as well.
I think a lot of men, as they get older into their 40s and 50s, their social circle shrinks. You know, they used to have a lot of friends when they were younger, and then, you know, job pressures and maybe family pressures mean that, you know, your social circle reduces to almost nothing. So I guess, you know, you can be looking around thinking, well, who do I go and talk to?
Exactly. I think it is. So many men, I think, throw themselves into their career and in a sense, like start to define themselves by their career, their job. And so, yeah, the classic stat was, you know, I think for the generation preceding ours, the boomers, you know, when they retired, a lot of the men would die pretty soon afterwards because some of that shock from everything being structured, rigid, these people are suddenly finishing work and finding, oh, I've actually got no friends because I've just been involved with work and my wife and that's it. I've got no friends, no social network. I've got no values. So it's really important to maintain those. You know, if you haven't got a friend that you can reach out to at the moment, then I think one of the positive sides of social media is you can find different groups where you can be supported. You know, if you just go on Google things or go onto Facebook and search for groups around interest areas or specifically for men or for midlife men, you will find stuff. And you've got great initiatives like, you know, Andy's Club as well, that men's group that's all around the country, a great place for men to go and talk as well. So there's more out there, fortunately.
There are. And in fact, I've spoken to quite a few different organizations on this podcast. So there's the Men's Sheds Association for men that want to go out and do something other than sit around once they've retired. But also I was talking to someone recently from an organization called F3 Nation, which is started in the US, which is around kind of fitness and fellowship and just, you know, providing men with confidence. And that, I think, believe that's over in the UK now as well. So let's talk about the andropause. You might need to define what that is. You know, I'd be really interested to hear more.
Yeah, so the andropause is basically, it can also be known as age-related testosterone decline. So for men, our primary sex hormone is testosterone. It's the male sex hormone. It peaks in our late adolescence, early 20s. Then it will decline at a steady rate, 1 to 3% per year, which doesn't sound a lot. But when you're compounding, by the time you're in your 50s, you know, your testosterone levels could be like 30 to 50% lower than they were in your 20s. Now, why does that matter? Well, testosterone plays a role in the body in helping maintain muscle mass. So one thing that starts happening as we age, we suffer from something called sarcopenia, but basically natural muscle wastage. So that's happening. Testosterone obviously plays a role with our confidence, our energy, our cognition, which is why we can, you know, get fuzzy feelings. It plays a role in supporting mood, so we become more prone to things like anxiety and depression. And of course, it plays a role in libido as well. So that's why the libido can fluctuate or disappear. And what's interesting is, you know, the time that this is happening for men, it's going to be around the same time that women are going through the menopause. So if you're in a heterosexual relationship and you're both going through these hormonal processes, but neither of you really knows what's going on or driving it, obviously that can create a huge distance between a couple. So I think it's really important. Yeah, there's so much out there now about the menopause, deservedly so. So many books written, TV shows. It's great. It's fantastic. But we need to start talking more about how men at this age, you know, 50s onwards, can be impacted by low testosterone and the impact that can have on relationships, on career, and all the rest of it.
So what can you do then? So do you go down a, you know, doctor and, you know, take some sort of drug or medicine route? You know, there are little blue pills that we all know about. Or is it something far more to do with your frame of mental state?
Well, there's a lot you can do with your lifestyle, and I'd encourage everyone to start there, right? So the first thing is, you know, as I said there, we're losing muscle mass. So it's really important that we resistance train at least twice a week to at least preserve what we've got, but not least build new muscle. Interesting, when we work out intensity, when we lift weights, when we do high intensity exercise, we'll actually temporarily boost our testosterone levels and levels of human growth hormone, which are also, you know, declining away. So if we're regularly exercising, we actually can slow the rate of decline by keeping those levels high by constantly bumping them up through exercise. The other thing we can do is clean up our diet. So we know certain foods really impact our hormone pathways, things like high in sugar, processed foods. So if we can eat, you know, just think about eating a little bit more healthily, things like, you know, fish, chicken, lean red meats, lots of vegetables, and kind of veering away from, you know, pre-packaged ultra processed foods, looking at sugar content. Things like that will help on the physical side. On the mental side, it's about being aware that, yes, with testosterone declining, that can affect your mood and your cognition as well. So I think for the mood side, it's about recognizing that and having daily things you do, like a daily ritual to help get you in a great state of mind. So a good thing is a daily gratitude ritual, you know, just thinking, okay, what am I grateful for in my life from yesterday? Three things from yesterday. Three things in general, and set an intention for the day. And over time, when you do that, will actually move you to a more positive place in terms of your mindset. And then things like, you know, just continue having goals, continue pushing for them, communicate. All that's helping keep the neural pathways active. Those are lifestyle things. You mentioned medicine. Now, if you think your testosterone is really low, you can obviously get tested. You can get blood tests. And there is, like, you can get HRT for women, you can get testosterone replacement therapy, TRT for men. But I would always say do the lifestyle stuff first, always get checked first. Because the thing is with TRT, once you're on it, you have to stay on it. It will shut down your own testosterone production once you're on it. So that it's a choice for life. It's not like, oh, I'll try it for a bit and stop it. And there's other things that, you know, you should be aware of with talk about with your health professional as well. So I'd say always start with the lifestyle things. And it's surprising how great you can feel just by working on your mindset a little bit and moving your body more and cleaning up your diet. And we're not talking like you have to be some super health freak or anything like that, but just small changes can yield actually quite big changes over time.
Yeah, I mean, physical health is so directly linked to your mental health as well, isn't it? So how do I know if, say, I'm feeling, you know, anxious over a long period of time, don't quite know why? How do I know that might be down to my, you know, depleted testosterone levels?
Well, this is the problem, right? And it's the same issue that women have with menopause. The symptoms are so wide and varied that you can actually think it's something else. So you might think, oh, am I just low on energy at the moment? Am I just a little bit down at the moment for some other reason? So it's really hard, unless you actually go and get a test to get your testosterone levels tested, it's really hard to know what it is. But I'd say, you know, if you're in the age range, if you're in your 50s or 60s, and over a period of time, like 2-3 months plus, you're feeling lethargic, your libido is gone, things like that, then it's probably worth going and asking for a testosterone test to check the levels in your body.
Going back to Ibiza, what happened next then?
What happened next? So, I picked myself up, dusted myself down. Like I said, I sought like a number of different therapies and realized I had the whole toolkit myself. You know, it's like, it's crazy. Like I know this stuff. So started to apply it, turned myself around. My confidence came back up. Picked the business up, started going. And that put me in a place then to meet someone new. So, my current wife, Claire, was over there. We met. We found out that she got separated exactly the same time that I did. And, we kind of saw each other for a little bit. It didn't really work out at first because she was in the UK and I was in Ibiza. We had a little merry dance for about a year or so. But then, we ran into each other in London and we're just like, okay, let's do this. So, and we've been together ever since. And that's, you know, that's my partner, my co-founder for the Midlife Mentors. And, yeah. So, and I also say this as a message to people out there. I mean, I certainly felt at the time that, you know, romantically, it was the end of the road for me. I was like, I felt like, who wants me? My confidence was gone. Do I even want to go into another relationship? Can I trust anyone again? All these kinds of things. And it does take time to get over them, but ultimately there is the right person out there for you. I believe that for everyone.
How can you change your mindset then? If you're feeling, as you just described, you know, you say you've got your relationship's failed for whatever reason. And as you said, you know, you're thinking, well, you know, am I too old to try this again? Or, you know, who wants me? How do you change your, you know, what do you do to help yourself?
It's a mixture of looking at your beliefs and your behaviors, right? So here's the thing, like belief always follows a result, but sometimes we need the belief to take the action to get the result in the first place. So it's a bit of a chicken and egg, but I'd say when you're feeling ready, just gently put yourself back out there and but don't, you know, go out with expectation of, you know, you're going to meet the one straight away. Just go out, meet different people, speak to them, go on dates, try different things, you know, all these different experiences, meeting different people. You'll find people you click with, people who you don't click with, you know, but all that is a learning. And then you can start to be, okay, you can start to build your confidence up going, okay, that went really well. I like this person. And the other thing you can do, you know, when I met Claire, it was quite a conscious decision. I was like, I don't know if I'm ready for this. But here's the thing. If I protect myself by closing down and pushing it away, then that's just gonna be a pattern I'll keep repeating. I know that. And actually, am I really protecting myself? Because I'm not that happy being alone when I know there's someone I could be with. So it was a conscious decision to go, you know what, it is a risk to trust another person. And let's be honest about that. When we go into a relationship, there's always a risk there. But I felt that risk was worth taking. So I was like, you know, if the worst happens, it'll just be what I've already been through anyway. So it'll really hurt and be really painful, but over time, I'll be able to pick myself back up. But the potential payoff is so much greater that I'd rather risk it and go for it.
And so you continue to run the retreats with Claire. And so what can they expect from one of your retreats?
So it was our major business, but now we only do like two a year. So we do it like a long weekend away. We work with really nice hotels. So Six Senses in Ibiza and Punta Romano in Marbella. So it's a long weekend. It's quite immersive. So we keep you busy through the day. There is enough time to go and enjoy the surroundings as well. But yes, there's exercise components, but it's about looking at, you know, what are your beliefs? Like, what do you want from life? Where are you holding yourself back? How are your relationships? So these are just all workshops that we'll work on. So we keep them really small. We have like eight people maximum of them with Claire and I there. So we go really deep with the coaching side. So it's about, I think learning new things about yourself, learning new skills you can apply to make your life better, and having a great time, you know, moving your body in amazing surroundings and having great food as well.
I wanted to come back to something you said a bit earlier, actually. You were talking about, you know, your identity is really wrapped up in your professional, you know, or what you do for work. So how do you break that kind of forged, you know, reliance on almost introducing yourself as a banker or a lawyer or a, you know, someone that works in the local Tesco, you know, how do you change that?
Yeah, it's such a cultural norm, isn't it? It's always like, hey, what's your name and what do you do? How do you break it? I think you look to become a more rounded person. So I think this is something that requires like brutal honesty with yourself. It's like, outside of work, what do I do that lights me up, that I enjoy? And if the answer right now is not a lot, then you should really find something, because work's going to finish at some point. So I think it's about getting out there and going, okay, what would I like to do? What are some of the hobbies I have? Then you can introduce yourself. Oh, you know, I'm a really keen golfer. I love competing in Ironmans. You know, you have another talking point straight away, whatever it is, but find that interest and build it. Because, you know, I firmly believe as human beings, we're designed to grow, not just to stay comfortable in one place. So find those things that light you up. If you don't know what lights you up, I always say to clients, think back to when you were a child. What did you want to do that you didn't? Just go do it now. And it's funny. We can let our ego get in the way. It might be like, oh, I've always wanted to learn to dance the tango. Like, I don't want to go there and be a complete beginner at my age. Well, you know what? Everyone's got to be a complete beginner. And if you don't start, you'll never know.
I think that's one of the problems, isn't it? Because we're so used to kind of getting things instantly nowadays that, you know, you have to remember that it does take time. I mean, for speaking personally, if you want to change what you're doing as a job, you know, you're not just going to walk into it tomorrow. And in fact, you know, you often have to make some sacrifice. There's some compromise in order to get to where you want to get to. And it might take a year, it might take 2 years, it might take longer. But unless you start, unless you put one step in front of the other, then it's not going to happen. So I don't know if you've got experience of this and helping people who feel, especially if they are restricted by the amount of expenses they've got in their life. You know, if you've got a job, you might have a mortgage, you might have, you know, you might have children that are dependents, loans, that sort of thing. And that can often restrict or make you feel trapped in what you're doing at the moment. It's all very well thinking, well, I want to do this, but how do you actually tangibly do that when you're in that sort of situation?
I think it's about recognizing that you've hit on something there. You know, in today's society, we're always looking for like the quick win, the instant gratification. And also we tend to believe that it's always a linear progression. But in actual fact, we tend to go around the houses. It's never a direct line. We go around. So if you're feeling like that now, I say, look at your skill set. What skills do you have? And you can create like a Venn diagram. I work on something from Japanese culture called Ikigai, which is about finding life purpose. We look at, you know, what does the world need? What do I love doing? Where are my skill set? And when you find that overlap, then you've got the sweet spot and you go, oh, okay. So it might not be that you, and this is what I wouldn't do, is like, you know, oh, I hate my job and I feel trapped. I'm going to leave today and reinvent myself as a barista or something. You know, that's just not sensible. But if coffee's your passion, while you're working your job, you know, without spending money, what in your spare time you have, well, you find out about coffee, then get into the world of coffee, speak to people, start making those connections, go, oh, you know, I'd like to try this, I'd like to try that. And this is how we do it, right? Rather than thinking you want to make that big jump to the next thing that will work straight away, I think it's about feeling your way so you feel safe and secure. You're not like letting the subconscious go into its panic mode. You're feeling your way. And as you do that, you'll open up new opportunities as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I did an episode with Kodge, who was a MasterChef finalist a few years ago, and he was talking about this concept of ikigai, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, you know, finding out what you're meant to be doing, you know, what are you best at doing? And it's a really interesting concept, isn't it? Because it can do and should do apply to everyone, really. You know, we're not programmed to do jobs that we don't want to do. You know, we need to shake that and think about things differently. So, Jay, tell me a bit about the Midlife Podcast.
Yeah, we launched that way back in 2019. And that was Claire and I. We just said, oh, you know what? Let's just start sharing the information that we have. So, that, you know, that we know there's info we can share that will help people make changes in their life. So it started off with just the two of us. And we did a few episodes. I mean, that was season one. And we thought and then we did season two. And now we just do it every week. So it tends to alternate between different interviews with people and us like talking about different aspects of midlife, whether that is everything from exercise, nutrition, to mindset, psychology, beliefs, sleep patterns, whatever we think might be useful to people out there.
So as someone then who has a lot of experience working with and talking about midlife, what would you say are the, you know, the most important things to remember, you know, when you're in your midlife years, and especially where perhaps you are feeling stressed or alone or isolated in how you're feeling. What are the things you can do to help yourself that are really easy to do that anyone could do?
So I'd say the first thing is always remember to have compassion with yourself. We can be awfully hard on ourselves, right? The voice we hear internally is our harshest critic of all. So try and tone that voice down, right? And try and be kinder to yourself. It's the first thing. Second thing is like, know that this phase of life will pass. So there's a great book called The Happiness Curve, where there's the peak unhappiness, I think, falls in our mid-40s. But then we actually come out the other side and as we get older, we get happier and happier and happier. So know that that's coming. In terms of what you can do for yourself to work more actively, is listen, I firmly believe everyone should be exercising, right? It's not that long ago that we were hunter-gatherers. It's certainly not long ago we were actually still, you know, in an agrarian society working in fields. We're talking, you know, a few hundred years at most. From an evolutionary perspective, human beings are designed to be up and moving around, not sat at a chair and a desk all day. So even if most of us are sedentary for our jobs, but carve out that time for exercise, it's so important. It'll have so many benefits, not just for your physical health, but your mental health as well. So start to move your body more, you know, and if you're not used to it, it's fine just to, you know, just commit to going for like a short walk every day or something like that. Watch the sugar in your diet. There's so much sugar now in our food. Food manufacturers know it's highly addictive, that we love it. So once you have a little bit, you just want to keep eating more. Learn to read food labels. So foods will have carbohydrates, of which sugars. And anything over 21% is a high sugar food, according to NHS guidelines. So to start to look at the packets, you'll be surprised. You pick up a tuna sandwich from the shop and think, oh, that's low sugar. Then you'll read it and it's not, because it's in the bread, it's in the mayonnaise. So cut sugar, because sugar has an aging effect on the brain. It suppresses our immune system. It suppresses our hormone system. It's just bad news. So it's about cleaning up your diet, looking after yourself, drink more water. And I'd say seek social connection, because we know loneliness is actually one of the biggest killers. So like, look after your social networks, build new social networks, and get hobbies and interests, because we also want to keep the brain active and keep life interesting and fun.
Brilliant. Thank you. So just finally then, James, if someone listening is interested in your retreats and or your podcast, you know, where do they find you?
Yeah, if they just come over to themidlifementors.com, you'll find everything there. So yeah, we've got like a ton of free resources people can access. There's information on the retreats. You can reach out to us, Claire or myself. Yeah, and we love hearing from people as well.
Brilliant. Well, James, thanks so much for talking to me today. Wish you the best.
Thank you, Philip. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Midlife Men podcast with me, Philip Briscoe. If you want to find out more about the Midlife Mentors, head over to their website, themidlifementors.com. If you have a story to tell and you think your experience would help others, then please get in contact with me either via the website, mid-lifemen.com, or email me at midlifemen01@gmail.com. Finally, please share the podcast with your networks, and if you enjoyed listening to it, then please rate or like the podcast to help raise its profile, and we can reach more people who might benefit from the stories shared by my guests.